Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where we bring awareness to people and organizations who are doing great things and making a big impact in our community. Our goal is to inform, inspire, and impact you through the stories that we share and the mission and the vision and the purpose of the nonprofits we highlight. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellenbecker Investment Group. Today's topic of conversation is something that I think people don't really want to talk much about at times or even admit that it's a real problem. Certainly a problem nationwide, but very much so in our own local community. There's been an increased awareness of this issue, which is great because people need to be aware of the problem and then look for and support women who are experiencing it and also be aware of those whose mission is to offer help. The 2023 End Abuse Homicide Report indicates that there was one domestic violence-related homicide in Waukesha County and 28 in Milwaukee County, contributing to a total of 85 deaths in Wisconsin due to domestic violence. One in six domestic violence homicides in the nation occurs in Wisconsin. So you can see why it's so important to continue to build awareness of the problem and see what we can do to be a part of the solution. Here to talk more about this topic is Jessie Trout, Director of Shelter and Transitional Living Services from the Women's Center in Waukesha. Welcome to the show today, Jessie.
Thank you so much. We're so excited to be here to talk to you.
Well, I'm happy to have you here and learn all about the great things that you guys are doing. First of all, for those that may not know, share with us the mission of the Women's Center.
The Women's Center is dedicated to providing safety, shelter, and support to all who are impacted by domestic violence, sexual violence, child abuse, and human trafficking.
And then what support services does the agency offer to survivors?
We like to share that we have a wide array of services available because what may work for one survivor may not work for another individual. Also, our services are available for anyone who's been impacted because it's also hard to be the helper, the family member, the friend, the employer of someone who has been harmed. So we always want to let folks know that we're here for the entire community. We have a hotline that operates 24 hours a day. We have an emergency shelter. We have two other housing programs that we work with. We have advocates who assist with various systems within the legal scape, so assisting with filing for restraining orders or making police reports, learning about how the systems work with one another and how they can access safety and support. We have ongoing support groups. We have advocates who will meet with folks one-on-one. We have walk-in spaces, and we also respond 24 hours a day to sexual assault exams. So we have a huge scope of services, and it's available to adults, children, men, women, everyone who's impacted by this.
So even though you are the Women's Center, you want to let people know that you also provide support services for men.
Yes, we're here for everyone. We were founded by five amazing women in the early 70s, and so we're named after them. But everyone is welcome to receive support and advocacy from the Women's Center.
And I think that's really important to know. And I like how you emphasize that
not only the individual is going through the situation, but those that support her are, or her children, like you said. So that's great that you offer support to the extended family members. What would you say are some myths that are related to domestic violence or sexual violence that I think would be really important to share?
We often hear that, you know, this doesn't happen where I am or I don't know anyone. And the reality is everyone knows a survivor. Statistically, it is impossible that you do not know someone in your life who has been impacted by domestic violence, sexual violence, or child abuse. It happens in every county in the state of Wisconsin. And as someone who's worked on hotlines for 20 years, I can tell you we get calls from every single zip code. So it is happening in our community. And it's important that we're bringing awareness to that and letting survivors know that there are folks out here who believe them and who are here to support them and help them find safety.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to share that it's not or shouldn't be taboo. You know, that I can imagine maybe there are some people out there that say, you know, I'm embarrassed by the situation, that I never thought I would be in this situation. And what would you say to that?
There are definitely folks who say that. And what we let them know is we believe you. We're here to listen to you. All of our services are confidential. So even if you want to just start the conversation with, I'm not sure, but I'm wondering, we're here to talk through that. And we know that there's a lot of reasons why folks experience that shame and stigma and fear related to speaking up.
So you're there to listen. If you have any doubts, any questions, just call. Do you have any recent initiatives or projects that your agency is working on that you'd like to talk about?
We have two areas that we're excited to discuss with the community. One is last summer, the Child Advocacy Center became a part of the Women's Center. So this summer, we'll celebrate having them as part of our team for a full year. And we're also working on continuing our lethality assessment protocol and really expanding engagement and involvement throughout the county.
Okay. Lethality assessment protocol. Let's talk about what that is. Can you explain what it is? I understand that it's an evidence-based screening tool, but what is it exactly and how does it work?
It is a partnership across systems. So law enforcement, district attorneys, victim advocates, medical providers agree to work together to use this evidence-based tool. And it's a series of 12 questions that determines the likelihood that a relationship could end in a fatality or near fatality.
Okay. And so it's used across the county, across the country, really, isn't it? I mean, it started out east in Maryland or something. And
it did originate in Maryland, and it's used in multiple states and counties. There's several counties near us that have full implementation, and there's other areas that are still working on growing their engagement and services.
Okay. So it's just to reiterate, it is lethality assessment program or protocol, and it's an evidence-based screening tool, but it's a series of a dozen questions. It's a survey, you know, that will help determine if a person's life is at risk. Is that pretty accurate?
Yes. The version that we use is actually most often administered by law enforcement, and there's a standard approach that they take to asking the questions. First, they ensure that the victim themselves is safe and in a safe place to answer the questions. And then from there, it determines not only the likelihood that the victim would be significantly harmed or killed, but the potential that the perpetrator themselves would end their lives.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to pause. Let's just kind of take in what you've said so far. After commercial break, we'll dive a little more into this LAP discussion, and we'll follow it up with a discussion around key indicators and risk factors. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm talking again in this segment with Jessie Trout from the Women's Center of Waukesha County. So, Jessie, let's do a deeper dive into these LAPs, or lethality assessment protocols or program. What are some of the key indicators or risk factors that the program looks for in assessing lethality?
It starts out with some very direct questions. And like we had talked about, the officers receive specialized training, as does everyone else who's a part of this team. But it starts out with the hard question of, have they ever used a weapon or have they threatened to kill you? If someone says yes to that, that's automatically an indication that this is a highly lethal situation, that someone could be significantly injured or killed. Have they threatened to harm the children in your life or kill the children in your life? And are you fearful of their willingness or their threats to kill you? There's very specific language that the officers are trained to use, and they don't deviate from those questions. Mine were summaries, but they go in a very specific order. Those are the first three questions within the assessment, and a yes to any of those is an indicator that there's a chance for high lethality within this relationship. There's more questions afterwards, and if you answer yes to any of the other four, that's also an indication that there's a likelihood for extreme violence in there. The other interesting part of this is that at any point, officers can consider a relationship or a dynamic to be highly lethal, regardless of a score. So if a victim is really scared or unsure of answering or uncomfortable speaking out about this, based on the officer's training and their knowledge of this situation, they can still say to the individual, I'm really concerned for your safety. And individuals who have been in similar situations have experienced a serious injury or a death. We'd really like you to talk to an advocate. Mm-hmm. And that's where we come in as the crisis responders for the 24-hour hotline, is we're available to talk to an individual at any time, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day.
Nice. So if a woman calls the police show up, and the potential risk, that person that is a potential risk, or not at risk, but the perpetrator, mm-hmm. is in the house still, I can see where a woman would be, or a child or a man, you know, would be hesitant to answer those questions with a yes. And so it's nice to know that the officers then have to kind of, they're trained to maybe, as you say, assess the situation to see, even though they may be saying no, 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 maybe there's someone in close proximity that is making them answer that way, and now we still think this is a dangerous situation.
Yes, and part of the protocol is that the officers set up a safe environment for the victim, so they ensure that that harm doer is not nearby.
Okay.
But just because someone isn't physically close to us doesn't mean that we aren't still afraid or concerned about how our answers could impact us in the future.
Yeah, well, that leads me to what I'm thinking about next, and that is challenges. You know, what challenges do you face when you implement the program? I mean, that's just when you are starting, you know, the assessment, but what challenges do you face when you're implementing the whole program?
When you're implementing the whole piece, there is a fair amount of training that folks have to go to, and, you know, our friends who are in the judicial system have very full calendars and packed spaces, and so trying to navigate trainings that we can all attend and get those collaborative pieces on. We also have we as victim service providers have very specific state and federal statutes around confidentiality that have to be adhered to, even when we're working with law enforcement or district attorneys or things like that. So figuring out how to effectively communicate with one another. We've had some good conversations, and we've gotten a lot of things worked out in the past, but I would say that was some of the things that we looked at in beginning. We all were committed to the safety of our community and to survivors of domestic violence, and how do we help them in the most efficient way while still following all the rules that each of us needs to follow.
Right, right. Well, I'm sure that is a challenge. Well, how has implementing this program, this lethality assessment program, changed your team's response to the survivors?
In our opinion, it clears a pathway for survivors. It makes their access to different services within the community a little bit easier. It really frames their situation in a different way where whether it's them, their support people, their caregivers are understanding the high level of danger in the situation that they're facing. We've seen more individuals engage in ongoing services, which is a huge component of the lethality assessment, because the other part of it is that the earlier a person engages in services, whether that's talking to the hotline or coming into the shelter or talking to an advocate or attending support group, the more likely it is that their risk for harm is reduced. National statistics say that early interventions result in a 60% fewer homicides or near fatalities. And when we talk about near fatalities, those are those really egregious and intense injuries that take a long time to recover that significantly impact someone's future in so many different ways.
I mean, 60%, that's really, I mean, there are some staggering statistics around this whole topic. That's why I think it's so important that people become aware of resources available that they themselves can use or that they can pass on to someone else that they know or think is going through a situation. How does this program enhance collaboration within the community then and other service providers?
It gives everyone a common language to use, so that makes everything a little bit easier. In our experience, as I mentioned, it really streamlines the process for survivors. They have a better understanding of how the criminal justice system works. They have a better understanding of how law enforcement is responding to them. It even makes it easier when you're working with other service providers. So if a shelter is at capacity, we all have the same language to say, hey, we have an individual who's in a highly lethal situation. How can we work together? So in general, it makes things easier and more efficient for victims and everyone else involved as well.
Yeah, because the problem is more widespread than I think people perhaps understand or believe, not one organization can do it all, you know. So having that collaboration within the community, I think, is so key. And again, even though your depth of services is so awesome, you can't be there for everybody, you know, even though you would want to be. So, you know, knocking on the doors of some of those other partners that you have is so crucial. I'd like to end a nonprofit segment with a call to action for our listening audience. What would you say yours would be?
Our call to action would be to believe survivors, and we always are happy to have folks become involved with our agency. So if you are looking to volunteer, we are happy to find a way to have you engaged. But we always say start by believing.
Okay. And if someone is interested in donating, do you have a donate button on your website?
We do. We have a donate button on our website. We also have our wish list published. So we meet all of the basic needs for survivors engaged in our programs. Everything from toothpaste and toothbrushes to jammies and comfy, snuggly things. And all of the things you can think of in between. So we have both options available. If you are searching for us, the Women's Center Waukesha it's important to include the Waukesha part when searching for us. Otherwise, twcwaukesha.org, or our 24-hour hotline is the safest way for many folks to access, which is 262-542-3828.
Okay, give us that hotline number one more time.
262-542-3828.
Okay, thank you. Well, Jesse, lots of things to discuss. We don't have time to go into every single thing, but I think you've planted that seed. You've given some basic knowledge for listeners to know that your resource is there. And if they have any further questions, they can reach out and call. Again, either on behalf of a loved one or perhaps themselves. So thank you for being here for our interview today.
Thank you very much.
You are welcome. Well, Jesse talked about the importance of this lethality assessment program, and they obviously need continual support in order to sustain it and to continue to bring awareness to it. Stay tuned, because after our short commercial break, we're going to talk with someone who has been extremely supportive and helpful in advancing this mission. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest today is Chief Landon Nyren from the Delafield Police Department, who works very closely with the Women's Center on these lethality assessment programs and has been instrumental in helping to advance the awareness of it. Welcome to the show today, Chief Nyren.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
You are happy to have you here. And you're all suited up, so we feel really safe right now. Why was getting involved in this LAP, or the Lethality Assessment Program, important to you and your department?
Well, as you discussed a little bit earlier, no community is immune from domestic violence. And we believe all citizens deserve access to the best service when navigating these incredibly difficult situations. And as one of the smaller agencies in Waukesha County, we need to rely on our partners, both government and nonprofit, to provide the extra help to be effective and efficient in these types of investigations. And so by partnering with the Waukesha County Sheriff's Office, the District Attorney's Office, and the Women's Center on the ground floor, we were able to ensure that the program worked both for the largest law enforcement agency in the county, like the Sheriff's Department, and some of the smallest, like ourselves and our neighbors. And so by being on that early adoption, we ensured that we could all work together and it would work for everybody in the county.
And again, like we talked with Jesse, it's so important to have these partnerships, these collabs out there, because not one organization can do it all. And we're all, you guys are all working together for a common goal. And so I think having many partners or many collaborations in place can only help, well, everybody really, the individuals, the families, the kids. What impact would you say does this have on the officers administering it?
Well, prior to the LAP, officers relied heavily on hunches and their past experiences at a particular place, or sometimes similar situations. But after being trained in the LAP, they now get to use scientifically vetted questions. The responses provide a data-driven finding, which makes the risk assessment, which is what this tool is, more clear and more usable. And I can tell you, from my personal experience, having gone through an LAP with a survivor, when you get to that final determination and it is a high risk, and you're telling that person, based on your answers here, people in your situation have been seriously injured or killed, the impact not only on the survivor but the officer delivering that message is substantial, because it makes you realize that, we're doing a lot of these types of calls, and we're finding that in most cases the majority are screening in as high risk. And that's something that, based on a hunch before the system was implemented, we would never have known.
Really? Now, I might be totally off on this, but I don't live too far from the Delafield community, and I wouldn't think that that would be something that you are called to do. And maybe I'm in that crowd of naive people that is, I understand that it's a problem, as we said. It's a problem nationwide. It's more of a problem locally than people will even imagine. But it's kind of like that poverty issue. I interviewed an organization that talked about how many people sit at or below the poverty line. even though so many people think Waukesha County is this affluent county, and certainly we have our pockets of affluence, but there are people out there that are struggling. And I'm actually sitting here shocked that you would say that you are so, that you have a number of people in the Delafield community that you've had to respond to in this regard.
Oh, absolutely. You know, domestic violence doesn't know an income. It's not something that is based on how much you make, where you live, or what you do. It is pervasive in all walks of life, in all communities, and no community is immune from it. And so having these tools available to every agency in Waukesha County is critical, because, you know, the county serves the unincorporated areas through the Sheriff's Department, and then you have the City of Waukesha, Brookfield, New Berlin. They're serving large communities. They can use this tool, as well as the Delafields, the Heartlands, the Summits. You know, it works for everybody because it is data driven.
Yeah, and obviously the stats show that it's not only in the large cities. You know, the stats that I started out with at the beginning talk about the fatalities in Milwaukee County. There were certainly exponentially more than out in Waukesha County, but there shouldn't be any, you know. So we know that it's happening, and quite possibly in our own small communities. And so I think that's a wake-up call for people. Has your department seen any other effects or impacts of administering the lethality assessment program?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest impact we have seen is the realizations on behalf of the survivors when we deliver that final, you know, sentence that is, you know, important to show them that they are at high risk of being killed. But that message can really change someone's perspective.
Do you ever have somebody saying, no, that's not it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, there's going to be people who will not accept the, you know, the risk that they're facing, and that's, you know, unfortunate, but that's also why, you know, we take the steps we do in the program to bring the Women's Center on board.
And you can't ever force anybody, right? I mean,
right.
It's so, Jesse, to your point or in your segment, you know, maybe you've got somebody who is so scared and the person that threatened them is nowhere around, but they are so, so scared that they're almost immobilized. And you, the officer, are saying, yes, you know, we've gone through these 12 questions and you are at risk. Please seek help. But if they don't want to, you can't force them, right?
Right. And we're not out to force anybody to participate with the Women's Center or even, you know, our investigatory questions.
But I mean, just even for them to realize that you are in danger. Do something, you know, leave. Go to a safe place. If you don't even reach out, which they should, obviously, but if they, I mean, I'm sure you have, it runs the gamut in the responses that you get from people to maybe somebody shaking their head going, yeah, I think you're right. You know, I need to really start looking at this a little bit more seriously. To those that are saying, no, that's not the situation. Oh, it's just a once in a lifetime thing, you know. But I imagine that you guys have a tough job when you run into those people that don't want to admit that it is the situation that it is and to try and encourage them to seek help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most people, when they're dealing with the police, it's one of the worst days for them. We're not there on their best days. We're not there for the birthday parties. We're not there for the weddings, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they're working through something likely traumatic, and now they're dealing with a police officer on top of all of that. Mm-hmm. And so what this program does is it tries to bring them to that critical point. And that's where, you know, we actually see some of the changes since implementation, is we bring them to that critical point, and, you know, how we respond after that has been, you know, vastly improved by the LAP.
Okay. Well, but we certainly praise you and thank you for the work that you do, because it cannot be easy. I hope by the end of this interview that our listeners are all going to be well-versed in this lethality assessment program, so that if they know of someone who could benefit from it, or they themselves could benefit from it. They know that it exists. They know enough about it so that they can seek help or help somebody else. So please just take everything that you're hearing today to heart and take some notes if you're able to. But I think there are some other key things that you want to address, Chief. So we'll take a quick commercial break, and when we return, we'll get right back to it. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Julie Conimo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations, and I'm continuing my conversation with Chief Landon Nyren from the Delafield Police Department. So, Chief, let's talk about some of the warning signs. Give us some from high-risk domestic violence situations and how your team intervenes.
Yeah, absolutely. So our first intervention method is, you know, the LAP questions. But before we even get to those, we're going to be there as law enforcement officers. We're going to make sure everybody at a call is safe, and we're going to separate people and bring the survivor into a safe place. And by doing the LAP questions, we're able to quickly determine if it is one of those high-risk, high-lethality situations. As we talked about a little bit earlier, some of the questions revolve around the obvious signs that we're familiar with. And that's, you know, previous threats, previous acts of violence, which would include choking, and access to firearms. But some are not as obvious. For example, previous suicide attempts by the offender, and controlling behaviors. Whether those be over text messages or email, financial resources, things like that, all are taken into account. So we're taking those overt, stereotypical things that we normally, you know, all think of as domestic violence. And then we're also taking into account, based on the, you know, the data-driven evidence in the LAP, those more silent things, the things that don't often make it to the, you know, the front page, if you will, to determine if, you know, this is one of those high-risk situations. And then as law enforcement in the state of Wisconsin, arrest in a domestic violence situation is mandatory. So our first intervention is arresting the offender and removing them from the scene.
Oh, good. Okay, okay. That's good to know. Okay.
Yeah.
SOP, standard operating procedures, to take them out the door and remove them from the situation.
Absolutely. And then beyond that, you know, okay, so we've made the situation safe. The offender has been removed, but that's not the whole process for a domestic violence survivor. As we all know, that it doesn't end with a person being arrested. And so the very next step on scene with that survivor is a call to the Women's Center. And this is something that changed with the LAP. It used to be a fax or a phone call to them after we got back to the station.
Oh, I see. Right there on the spot.
On the spot. We are calling the Women's Center, and we are asking that survivor if they're willing to talk to an advocate. Not another police officer, not a prosecutor, a domestic violence advocate. Live, ready for them to talk 24 hours a day. And that has been influential in the amount of resources that the Women's Center has been able to deliver in these.
Yeah. Well, so what role does law enforcement play beyond responding to incidents? I mean, is there a way to help prevent domestic violence in the first place?
That's a tough question. But, you know, as we've learned, both at the Women's Center, the District Attorney's Office, and in law enforcement, domestic violence is cyclical. It is rarely ever, if ever, a single instance. And not only that, it can cross generationally. You know, generational violence is, you know, when a child grows up as a witness to domestic violence, it becomes normalized to them. So they may now believe, as they enter adulthood, that that's how they treat those who they love, or that's how they deserve to be treated.
Oh, yeah.
And so by intervening and engaging with the resources that are available through the Women's Center or through our victim witness programs at the district attorney's office and the CARE Center, our child advocacy center, which is now housed with the Women's Center, as we talked about earlier, we can try and break that cycle and give those kids, you know, the opportunity and the chance to develop healthy relationships as they enter, you know, honestly, as they enter their teens. Because domestic violence can start as soon as dating happens, as okay. soon as those relationships start to form. It's not just an adult problem. And so by bringing those kids those resources, that's how you can, at the ground floor, try and put that wedge in that domestic violence cycle. And, you know, as we've talked about, you know, many times here already, those services that are also available to the survivors through the Women's Center, you know, it gives them that opportunity to have a voice. It gives them that, you know, that those resources to get the restraining orders, get the legal paperwork to, you know, hopefully mitigate the chance of further domestic violence, but also those, you know, social and emotional resources to, you know, move forward and, you know, hopefully be their own advocate in the future.
Well, it's such a great program, hands down. I mean, there's no question there. Have you run into any challenges, or did you have any challenges when you were trying to implement this?
We are the government, so we sometimes bring our own challenges. but fortunately, we have excellent partners like the Women's Center on the nonprofit side. But, you know, this was a program that was launched with District Attorney's Office, Sheriff's Department, a local police department, a nonprofit organization, and then other departments within the District Attorney's Office, like victim witness services. And it can be difficult to align some of your goals on such a big project, but fortunately, we all came with focus on the most important goal, which was the safety of the survivors. And so by centering the project on that and then just addressing logistical issues as they came up, we were able to create a stable and easy to implement program. And that's, you know, great when you're working with two law enforcement agencies and you've all brought it together and you've worked on it together. Our goal then was to push this out countywide to all the law enforcement agencies in the county. And so we needed something that would be simple for a law enforcement officer on the street to use, and if possible, easier than what they were doing prior to this program, which is a pretty tall order for, you know, something of this nature. When you're trying to add additional questions and additional information, how on earth are you going to make it easier than it was before? And the solution to that was, well, standardization. Every agency in the county had their own protocols for domestic violence, their own forms, their own questions and methods. By getting this system on board with the district attorney's office early on, we were able to standardize it. And we actually, in most cases, were to provide, we provide a single two-sided form that covers both the pertinent investigatory issues in a domestic violence situation. That's what your district attorney's looking for, your prosecutors. So we make sure that the offender is held accountable for their actions. And it also covers the LAP questions. So we get that ball rolling for the survivor and their access to resources on scene. And so in the end, we were able to implement this with most agencies in Waukesha County. And, you know, we're moving forward to hopefully have 100% very soon.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is so great. What message, if someone's listening today to this interview and perhaps they're experiencing some form of domestic violence, what message would you want to leave for them, or what would you want to say to them?
My main ask would be speak up, and that can be very hard. And that's where the Women's Center, law enforcement can help you. It doesn't have to get to the point of a 911 call. We're here 24 hours a day, whether it's the Women's Center or my agency or your local agency. We're there at the push of a button on your phone or even an email to the Women's Center if you're not comfortable making a phone call. Any way you can reach out to us, because we are here to help you amplify your voice. We're here to give you that, those resources, and we're here to help you through whatever you're working through. And just want to let you know you're not alone.
Awesome. Well, I'm curious, if someone wants to support the Delafield Police Department in any way, how can they do that?
Pay your taxes.
Duly noted.
Yep. So we, you know, we're obviously funded through taxes, and so our big ask is programs like this can't exist without the support of nonprofits like the Women's Center. And the Women's Center can't exist without the support of donors, volunteers, and funding from other sources. And so, as we talked earlier, if you want to volunteer, you want to donate to the Women's Center, please search the Waukesha Women's Center on your favorite search engine. And all the information is there for you. Okay. In addition, it always helps to reach out to your local, your state legislatures. I know for a fact, because I've been involved with the Women's Center, the Child Advocacy Center, the Care Center within the Women's Center is facing ongoing, you know, budget issues at the state level. And if you can reach out to your state legislatures and say, you know, please support Child Advocacy Centers in the state of Wisconsin and domestic violence shelters in the state of Wisconsin, that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, wonderful. Well, we have run out of time, unfortunately, but I want to thank my guest today, Jesse Trout from the Women's Center of Waukesha and Chief Landon Niren from the Delafield Police Department. I appreciate you sharing all the ways that you're helping to bring awareness to this very real problem that we have right here in our own communities and how you're helping to support in any way you can. So thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to the Women's Center of Waukesha or the Delafield Police Department as they shared their contact information. If you know of a great organization doing great work in our community that you think would be a great guest for our show, or if there's a particular topic that you'd like to learn more about, feel free to email me at jill@ellenbecker.com. Tune in next Sunday morning at 10 to Milwaukee's philanthropic community to learn more about the ways people and organizations are making a difference in our community. You can tune in to News Talk 1130 on your radio, your computer, or your cell phone. I also encourage you to visit our website at ellenbecker.com to listen to well over 400 nonprofits share their mission and their vision. You can also listen on demand. My call to action as I close out the show is pretty much the same as I close out every show, and that is to give some thought to how you can help support and make a difference in some way for someone in our community. Our guests today have shared ways that you can do that with their organizations, whether that's by donating or advocating, which is a big way to, a great way to support our local nonprofit community. But there are so many different nonprofits out there, just under 2 million in the United States and just under 42,000 in Wisconsin. So there's one out there that is sure to resonate with you, depending on what your interests or concerns are. And I'm sure any way that you choose to give back and pay it forward will be appreciated. So take time to determine how you want to be a blessing and then give a blessing. Thank you for listening today and have a great day.